Welcome to Planet Marzipan Podcast,
your fish and Marillion podcast,
where we talk about all things in the planet of Marillion and fish. I'm Meza, and here's my mate,
Craig Houston.
Hello, and welcome to another Planet Marzipan. I'm Meza, I'm here with my friend,
Craig Houston.
Ooh, very nice. Very posh. Craig Houston.
Yes.
And we're here with a new format of the pod called Charting the Single, where we're going to discuss the Marillion singles in chronological order. And we've got some guests.
Hey.
Oh, Stephanie Bradley.
The legend that is.
The legend that is. And Mike Barton's back.
Mike Barton.
So we're going to start at the beginning and talk about Market Square Heroes. But before we do that, because this is Stephanie's first time on the podcast, we get to ask her how she first heard about Marillion and when she first saw him live.
Well, it's in a strange coincidence here. The person that took me to my first Marillion show is actually a friend of yours.
It is.
And well, I say recently reunited, but reunited at High Voltage, which was a great thrill for me, Mr. Robin Shaw,
yeah.
Who I had not seen for many, many years and who I am indebted to for taking me along with his sister, Teresa, to see lots of the early prog shows back in the 80s, 12th Night, all the marquee shows. So he has played a big factor in my early prog life. As I say, who I am very grateful to. But other places for finding out, I mean, Sounds was the Bible, really, of finding out what was going on. And, of course, the late, great Tommy Vance on the Friday Rock Show. I don't think, you know, any of us would have heard such a vast range of music had it not been for him.
No, no. And am I right in saying, Marillion, you were sort of later getting into Marillion because you were seeing bands like 12th Night and Palace and...
I was, yes. I had a bit of a sticking point with Marillion. being a diehard Genesis fan, like really diehard Genesis fan to the point of obsession, I couldn't bring myself to listen to Marillion because I just thought Genesis ripoffs. You know, when I heard Gwendol, I was just like, nope, can't do it, can't do it. But the more I heard as they went on, the more it just kind of got under my skin and... You know, this is my kind of music. I have to listen to it. You know, it just wins you over. But they were the only band that I never saw at the Marquee out of all those 80s prog bands. I saw everybody, 12th Night, IQ, Palace, you know, they all became my friends. Solstice, Liaison, Haze, Tamarisk, the list goes on. But I never ever saw Marillion at the Marquee.
Which presumably you were mixing in the same circles as Marillion, though, with all of those sort of friends, weren't you?
Yeah. I did go to a party or two where they were at, so...
That's a separate podcast, that one.
That's a separate podcast, yeah.
That's in our late-night podcast.
Well, you dropped the G-bomb there really early as well, Stephanie.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, it's in my blood. What could I say?
When did you first see the band live?
So it was 40 years ago, 28th of December at Hammersmith, and it was an amazing gig. It was awesome. So,
well, thank you for that. Everybody knows where we first heard about them, but I think Mike and I are going to talk about that now because we're going to talk about Market Square Heroes. Craig is still here. How old were you, Craig, when Market Square Heroes came out?
I was 10. So 10? There you go. 10.
You're a baby.
That's all right. I'm going to be younger. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Because that came out in, was it October of 82?
25th of October, 1982.
Yeah, I was born 1972 in September. So
you weren't listening to it then?
No, I think my main interest in 1982 was Star Wars figures and... getting very upset that Spock died in the Wrath of Khan. But other than that, you know.
I don't think you're over that yet, are you?
I'm not. No.
Understandable.
Okay, well, there is a Wikipedia entry for Market Square Heroes. Market Square Heroes is the debut single by British neo-prog band Marillion, released in October 1982, with Three Boats Down from the Candy as the B-side. The 12-inch single included an additional track, the 17 minutes, 15 seconds long Grendel. The A-side is an anthemic rock song whose lyric vaguely describes the rise of civil unrest under some charismatic leader in the face of increasing unemployment. And its original title was UB2001?
Yeah, UB2001. It was to do with the amount of unemployed at the time, even though it peaked at 3 million, but still.
You weren't reading about that when you were 10.
No, and it's quite funny. You're still here now with people saying that, oh, you know, Marillion shouldn't be, like, talking about politics and things like that. And yet it's right back at the very, very beginning, right from the very first song.
They nailed it. Nailed the flight to the mast very early on, didn't they?
They did. So, they
did. I'm just interjecting here because it says here that it's 17 minutes and 40 seconds.
Well, right, yes.
On the back of the single.
Absolutely. I and Wikipedia stand corrected. It does indeed.
It's not the first time that we've corrected Wikipedia on the pod.
Yeah, never knowingly accurate, as you know. So, Mike, you're on the pod today because this was your first Marillion single.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. As I said, my introduction was through a teacher. So we had a geography teacher who was into prog, got us into the likes of Camel, Jethro Tull, Magnum. I was late to Floyd. Floyd came much later. Rush passed me by, Yes passed me by, still do to this day, bores me to death, Yes. Love
anyway, it's been nice having you, Mike, if you'd like to leave.
Yeah, exactly. But I had one of my close friends in school was called Ian Mosley. Now, that wasn't even interesting at the time because Ian Mosley wasn't in the band, so it wasn't really a big thing. But Ian lived in a posh part of Bootle, and anyone that's listening knows that Bootle isn't posh, but there is a better part than where I was from. And he had a record player. So he was the one that bought it first. We'd all pile around to his house after school. His mum had made toasted sandwiches and we'd listen to records. And that's where I first heard it. I was later, I retrospectively bought singles and 12 inches a bit later on because I didn't have a record player. But that's how we were listening. And the whole Marcus Square Heroes, it just hit you like a steam train. It was like, wow, this is bloody great. I mean, Grendel came later. Grendel came dropping in to how that sounded was a bit later on. It wasn't really the focus at that point. It was Marcus Square Heroes.
Right. Okay. It was the opposite for me. I've told this story before on the pod, but I used to go into a record shop in York called Track Records, and I just used to hang around in there all the time. And occasionally on a Saturday when it was busy, they'd ask me to dip around the counter and just give a hand to serve. And one Saturday in late 82, I did that. And they would never pay you. They'd just give you a couple of records free. And Keith, the owner of Track, said, you're a big Genesis fan, aren't you? Have a listen to this. You'll love it. So I took it home. And complete opposite to yourself and Stephanie, the appeal was Grendel. I was and still am a massive Genesis fan. But this was more Genesis. You know, this was more of what I liked. So as cheesy as it is, I mean, I was listening to the bands that Stephanie talked about. It was difficult living in York because we didn't see any of those bands.
Yeah.
So I would write to IQ and buy the albums direct from IQ and 12th Night. And so I was reading all about the life that Stephanie was having in Sounds, but sort of writing to the bands and getting the records myself. But yeah, Keith gave me this copy of Market Square Heroes 12-inch for nothing. Well, for a couple of hours of work, if I'm honest,
yeah.
And a few thousand pounds and 42 years later.
A few thousand.
That's just the last couple of years.
that was the last weekend we went on.
Boring the pants off about 200 people on a podcast. That's weird, isn't it, how these things happen? I must admit, when we do the research for these things, I go back and revisit the tracks and re-listen to stuff. I can't say I recall listening to the studio version of the original studio version of Market Square Heroes for a long time.
Yeah,
same here.
I had it on in the car today. The keyboard riff is really like Dave Greenfield from the Stranglers. It's a real, and also I was really surprised by how tight Pete and Mick Pointer sound on the record. No, seriously, it sounds really tight. Stop laughing.
It wasn't until later you realised that Mick wasn't as tight.
I mean, it's a fairly basic riff, isn't it? Fairly basic rhythm, but it sounds incredible. And Pete's way up in the mix on this track.
I think you're right. You don't go back and listen to the studio version because we're so used to getting it as either a last song with Current Marillion or certainly last two songs with Fish and certainly last two songs with Still Marillion. You know, it's always in there. So you're used to hearing the live versions of it. You're not used to hearing the studio stuff.
Well, this is a conversation that me and John have been having for the last couple of days. With when we've been hearing it live, even back as far as 83, the version that they do live, there's never been a recorded version. The whole section of "It Give Peace Signs When I Wage War in the Disco," can't find it on any actual recorded version. It's just on a live version.
And any studio version.
Studio, any studio version. So the Battle Priest version, the re-recorded version that they did for the Fugazi sessions and stuff like that, like it's just bizarre.
Unless, of course, you know better. Yes. In which case, email us at onamarzipanpodcast@gmail.com and tell us we're wrong. What's your view on the other tracks on there? Stephanie, have you got any opinions on Three Bullets Down from the Candy?
Well, you know, I was listening to it today and it's all so familiar, you know, because I'll be honest, I haven't listened to a lot of this era for a long time. Yeah. And it was a joy, actually. It was, you know, because you remember all the words, like you remember, you know, I can't remember what I had for lunch 2 days ago, but I can remember the lyrics to all the songs that I loved and played back in the day. And it's not a bad song, really. I mean, I even like Grendel. I mean, even, you know, because I remember playing it to death once I'd got over myself and, you know, and my Genesis obsession. Because it's a homage, let's say, rather than, you know, it's a homage, in my opinion.
I could sum up Grendel in one word. Blind!
Blind.
Three Boats is the song that at Still Marillion gigs now, that's what people shout instead of Grendel. You shout for Three Boats.
Do they do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they've never done Shine as the single, have they?
No, Nathan's always shouting for that one.
What are you got any views on Grendel nowadays, Mike?
I love it. I mean, it's one of them songs. I think it divides the fan base. You either like it or you don't. I can remember I've got a feeling it was Ponton's Brim, might have been the first Minehead, but me and Darren, when did I take that photo of the Cakey Boys? The gang of you together. Were you all wearing them, the white T-shirts? Was that Ponton's or was it Minehead?
It was at Minehead. It was the first time
Yeah, it was that one then. So when the gig's finished, me and Darren went on a Grendel party. So we took his ghetto blaster. We went round Chalet's, knocked on the door and said, play Grendel. And we drank their beer for 17 minutes and 43 seconds.
It's very generous of you, that, Mike. Yeah.
I thought it was generous, yeah.
Craig, have you...
Nothing's changed.
Sorry.
No.
Changed.
No. Batman standing.
It still offers that service for people, whether they want it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Without the Grendel beer, it just turns up and drinks your beer. Craig, what are your views on this?
Well, I listened to Grendel again at the weekend for the first time in ages, and I didn't hate it, which I generally do.
Wow. I didn't hate it.
I didn't. I remember the time. It's one of those things when Still Marillion played. I just feel the eyes roll to the top of my head. when Fish played it twice at the convention, you know, I don't think the eyes could go further back in my head. But I appreciate it for what it is. I mean, it's Script, you know, has never been one of my favourite Marillion albums. I came to the party a lot later and I bought the singles, you know, back in 1990 when I was getting into the band. And bizarrely, back in the day then, it wasn't until I think it was mid-1990 that all of the EMI singles were still available to order. They hadn't been deleted.
Really?
Yeah, it was that late, back in the late 80s and into the 90s, they didn't delete the singles as quick. I think they still have backstocks of it, but whatever.
But what did that feel like? Because you came late, what was that like? Because obviously the band had changed by the time you came around.
Yeah, I mean, I was familiar with the earlier stuff. I mean, me mate Ralph mentioned this on the pod before. He sat us down and made us watch recital of the script a few times, and I just didn't get it. And it wasn't until he said, well, how about Misplaced? And that changed it. Like Misplaced and Clutching at Straws changed it for me. But as we've seen in the pods that were just recently done on Season's End, that's my entry point.
Yeah.
That's my entry point there. But I've got a better appreciation for the earlier stuff now than I had back then. But like Stephanie had mentioned earlier on, I don't go back to Script that often. I go back to Fugazi and Clutching and Misplaced more than I go back to Script.
Strange, because it's got a different producer to every... David Hitchcock produced this EP.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it still sounds like it belongs with Script, even though it's a completely different producer to me.
Yeah.
That speaks volumes for the band and what they were doing at that point, I think. You know, we talked about it when we did the Fugazi episode. We talked about the live, them having sort of that sort of almost punky edge to the playing. And you can sort of see the seeds of that in this EP, definitely. In the two tracks on the A side, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
The first EP came out in the October. The 12-inch picture discs, it was out on 7-inch single, 12-inch single. On the initial release, but the 12-inch picture disc didn't come out till about 6 months later, did it? It was
MI March, just after the album.
Yeah, and that affected its chart position. And
the pop charts. Have you got the numbers for that?
Yeah, it initially came in its first week at 62, but it didn't actually peak until its ninth week in the chart, or the ninth, there was a gap in for a couple of weeks where it dropped out of the charts, but it actually stayed in the chart for 10 weeks. But it peaked at 53 in May.
Yeah, that was in the second run. So that was off the back of the picture disc.
That was off the back of the picture disc and the album coming out.
Yeah.
So it's very odd for a brilliant single to kind of hang around for that period of time.
We struggled to find a review for it anywhere, haven't we? So I suppose, you know, because it was the first thing they'd released, it was just word of mouth at that point.
Stop the presses. We actually have a review of Market Square Heroes from Kerrang! Magazine on the 8th of November, 82. Thanks to Marco's Marillion Museum for this. Marillion's debut for AMI is very good. It echoes strong hints of Genesis circa Gabriel, a classic era, and is well worthy of all attention. Fans will be interested to learn that the 12-inch version contains a mammoth 17-minute rendition of a tune, Grendel, which has fast become a stage favourite, and who said the days of value for money were over? Also, Kerrang's journalist's poll for the best singles of 1982, Market Square Heroes, was fourth. Now, I don't think it got a lot of airplay, but...
No. Do you remember hearing it on the Friday Rock Show, Stephanie?
I'm going to say on the Friday Rock Show, definitely.
Yeah. Tommy Vance was there.
Tommy, right from the early get-go, he was plugging Marillion.
But one thing that's actually quite nice is on the deluxe version of Script that Warner's brought out, one of the discs is the remastered Market Square Heroes EP, which has the Battle Priest version on it.
Yeah.
But also what it does have on, as well as the three tracks from the single, it does have Chart and the Single on it as well.
Talk about that in another pod.
We'll talk about that when we will talk about that.
So, any final thoughts? Are we doing Genius or Bollocks on singles?
If you want to do Genius or Bollocks, we can do Genius or Bollocks.
Bear in mind, before she answers this, Stephanie still works for the band. So, take her answers with a pinch of salt.
How many disclaimers can I make?
As many as you want.
Kennedy's really, you know, he's trying to get sacked, some of the stuff. So,
That's all right. Stephanie's not going to insult any of our Polish listeners, so we'll be fine.
Yeah.
I think genius, actually.
Oh, no, it's track by track, Stephanie. It's not the whole thing. So you can revert back to your Genesis purist when we get to Grendel if you want.
Well, no, I think it's genius because eventually it got me. So
yeah.
If I know all the words to it and I can remember all the words to it and I haven't listened to it since God knows when, then it must be.
Yeah, definitely genius. It's the routine. And also the artwork. I know you've had Mark on, but you know, the artworks, I love the artwork that came, the progression that came from that and the following singles. You can see the progression of Mark moving through with the changes, but also you can see the detail coming in more and more as he goes through the singles as well.
I mean, we talked about it on the Mark episode, but the eye and the nostril on here, fantastic. Just, that is so, you know, it just draws you to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it was the start of the iconography, really, wasn't it? From the very beginning, that went all the way through the Fisher era.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also the fact that it bookended Fisher's career with the image that Mark did for the Weltschmerz with the jester.
Yeah, the final jester image. It's really, both really nice images.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you're all right, in my opinion. It's absolute genius. It's what started all this for me and Mike and lots of other people besides Stephanie. You know, it was our gateway into this bonkers world that we just talk about endlessly now.
Yeah, I'll have to give it a genius as well because of what it is and what it represents.
Has anybody
It'd be interesting to hear what the members of the band think of it.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Well, it's like anytime H sings the lyrics, he doesn't very rarely actually sing like "I am your Antichrist." Was it "I am your Uncle Pete"? Lend me a fire.
Yeah,
I don't know. Has anybody got the 7-inch single?
Yeah.
No, I've only got the 12.
Yeah, I've got the 7-inch, but I think that was that the second time around. I'm not at home. Otherwise, I'd play on some show.
No. Okay. Well, thanks for your thoughts on Market Square Heroes. And this is the end of our first ever Charting the Single episode. So in time-honoured fashion.
Thank you to Stephanie.
Thank you
to Mike.
Thank you.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
And it's good night from her.
Take care.
And stay alive. Ooh, I got to see it.
Thanks for listening to Planet Marzipan Podcast. Please like and subscribe from whichever platform you get your podcasts from. You can contact us at planetmarzipanpodcast@gmail.com and check out marillion.com, fishmusic.scot or fishmusic.eu for all the good stuff.